Hello, my name is Paul Kearney. I am Professor of Politics and Public Policy, and this is a series of short podcasts to accompany my series of blog posts, which introduce key public policy concepts and theories in 1,000 words. This one is on evolution, or evolution. And you should also listen to the posts, podcasts on multiple streams, punctuated equilibrium, and complexity. Now, the discussion of evolution, to my mind, it's very useful, but there are things to bear in mind and to be careful with. The first is, there's a lot of dodgy literature out there that talks about people or particular social groups being more evolved. Now, that tends to not be a feature of this policy analysis that I'm talking about. The second thing to bear in mind is that evolution as a term has an intuitive meaning, I think, and it's used too loosely. If you get anything from this, it should be the ability to challenge people that use evolution to mean little more than change. So people talk about, institutional evolution. They're really just saying that things change, and you need to be careful about what kind of change they mean, because I think intuitively people are talking about gradual change with some notion of improvement. Now, that might be what they mean, but that's not necessarily what evolution means. The third thing to bear in mind is when we're using it in policy analysis, is it just a metaphor, or are we actually describing processes, real processes that are evolutionary, like, for example, the nature of selection? Now, this sort of confusion can help explain why you find so many different descriptions of evolution in the study of public policy. So here's a list of things that it can and often does refer to. Number one, the cumulative long-term development of policy solutions. Maybe that's the intuitive one. Then you have number two, major disruptions in the way that policymakers think about and try to solve policy problems. Well, I think that sounds much more like punctuated equilibrium. Then three, you have the discussion of, the maintenance or radical reform of policymaking institutions. Well, I think that sounds like punctuated equilibrium in historical institutionalist accounts. Then number four, you have discussions of emergent behaviour within complex systems. Then number five, you have a focus on actors like policy entrepreneurs who are using trial and error strategies when adapting to their environments. Then finally, you have this sense of things coming together to create the conditions for major policy change. When you talk about multiple streams, it can be a creative window of opportunity style process. When you talk about Peter Hall, I get the sense this is more of a destructive, failure-related, perfect storm type process you're discussing. So that's about six different discussions that we have to separate somehow. So it's worth looking at some examples of high-profile theories of policymaking, which draw on evolution in different ways. Now, a good starting point is multiple streams, on which there's a separate post and podcast. Now, I think Kingdon's point, the use of evolution is to explain that policy change is not inevitable even when policymaker attention lurches and is high for a significant period of time. Because what he says is that although this attention might lurch, a problem will not be addressed until a solution already exists. And essentially, he describes the sort of gradual evolution, gradual improvement of a policy solution as it becomes, technically and politically feasible, and until the point a policymaker has a motive and opportunity to adopt it. So that's evolution and a so-called policy primeval soup to describe the slow progress of an idea or a policy solution towards acceptability. Then you have punctuated equilibrium theory, again as a separate podcast. And that's there to help explain periods of institutional stability or instability, or policy continuity and change. And what they're describing is, incremental policy change in most cases, but accompanied by seismic change in a small number of cases. So this kind of evolution is different. Your kingdom's slow progress, partial mutations, is replaced by Baumgartner-Jones' fast, disruptive, pure mutation. So note the things that they point to. For example, you don't need that longer process of, evolution in terms of the gradual change in a policy solution. If, for example, you can appeal to a different policy-making venue more open to new solutions. And you can go down that route with a discussion of, Peter Hall's work, which is to say, sometimes policymakers replace one group of experts with another. And again, in that case, there's no need to sort of soften a policy solution because you don't have the same audience anymore. Then you have a discussion in complexity theory, in which what we're essentially trying to discuss is that actors interact with institutions and environments to produce rather unpredictable outcomes. We talk about emergent outcomes, which often seem to emerge locally in the absence of central control. And I like to think about that in terms of three steps. So you start with institutions are sets of rules and norms, and they represent ways for people to retain certain ideas and encourage particular forms of behaviour. Now, there are many institutions within complex systems. There are a large number of overlapping institutions. And third, you have new behaviours. New rules arise when these institutions interact with each other. Lots of actors following different rules interact with each other. They're in sort of constant collision, producing new ways of thinking and behaviour that seems to emerge from these interactions. Then that sort of behaviour and the rules underpinning behaviour are passed down through the generations, but in an imperfect way, allowing new forms of thinking and behaviour to emerge. Now, I think complexity is useful there to raise this next question, which is, is evolution in policy studies, is it just a metaphor, or are we trying to make a more systematic comparison with evolution in nature? Now, I think if you were to describe policy processes as evolutionary and go beyond that metaphor, you would need to use the language of evolution more explicitly, and that tends to revolve around those three terms, variation, selection, and retention, to help describe and explain outcomes. Now, I think the idea in the natural world is that you have actors like humans looking to do at least two things. One is pass on their genes, and the other is to cooperate with others to secure resources and share them out with their kith and kin. So, in the political world or the social world, the equivalent is passing on what are called memes, as described famously in the 70s by Dawkins before he became a Twitter celebrity. So you're describing passing on ideas or beliefs or ways of thinking that we use to understand the world. So in that case, variation refers to the different rules adopted by different social groups to foster the collective action required to survive. Then you have selection, which describes the interaction between people and their environments, and the idea that particular environments provide an advantage to some groups over others, or they encourage certain behaviors, or at least some groups are better at responding to their, adapting their environment to their behaviors. Sorry, their behavior to the environments. And then retention describes ways in which people pass on those memes or ways of understanding to ensure that they're, reproduced. So they're enshrined in rules, and we might call those rules institutions. Now, a key sort of aspect of evolutionary theory when applied to policymaking is this idea of passing on memes through the generations. Now, I think in nature, again, intuitively, when we think of passing on evolution through the generations, we're thinking of a process that takes hundreds, thousands, millions of years. But I think when you're talking about policy generations, it's much more like the study of fruit flies in which, a generation can be a month or months, or viruses or bacteria in which it can be days or weeks. So these ways of thinking that we talk about, they can change constantly as people interact with each other. And big jumps in way of thinking might be associated with generational shifts, but that can take place much more quickly than you'd imagine with evolution in nature. So, for example, Kuhn, when he's talking about the scientific paradigms, talks about jumps in ways of thinking as one generation of scientists retires to be replaced by another. So what's that? 20, 30 years. You can also talk more quickly about one generation of experts being replaced within government, which can be, that can be, generational change over a small number of years. That's how things are described by Peter Hall. So where do we go from there? So I would say evolution theory is useful, but it's difficult to track because it's a body of disparate work, sometimes loosely related to work in the natural sciences, that I describe here as, evolutionary theory. So be careful about, how you use it. Or better still, prompt other people to be careful whenever they identify the role of evolution.